One of the comments that was made at the end of the shiur last week was something which really resonated with me, and that is, you know, you look at this bracha and we say it every day, perhaps three times a day, but not often do we have the opportunity to actually understand and appreciate what stands behind these very simple and cryptic words. And when you begin to break it down, you understand that it's not as simple as we may have thought. And there's so much rich meaning and meaningfulness that we should think about as we read these words. So we started last week that the first bracha is called Birchas Avos. If you look at the heading on top of the bracha, you will notice the beginning of every bracha in Shmona Esrei has a heading. And the heading, we are on page 98 in the Art Scroll Siddur. The heading to this bracha is Avos. And here, we highlight the fact that God loved our forefathers, and that we are the children of our forefathers. So just something to consider, something to think about. It's interesting that the Gemara, when it talks about the breakdown of Shmona Esrei, the Gemara tells us that the beginning of Shmona Esrei needs to be set aside for Shivcho Shel Makom. The first thing that we need to do is give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so to speak, the Gemara says the same way when you were talking to somebody that you needed a big favor from, you would first try to say something positive. You know that I'm well aware of all the wonderful accomplishments and I'm well aware of all of the great legacy and life that you lived. And then after you get through all of that, you get into your request. Okay, tachlis, after we've got through that, let's talk business. And the same, says the Gemara, is the way to speak with God. First thing that we do is we talk about how wonderful He is and how proud we are of all the wonderful things that God has done in His existence, so to speak. And then after that, we get into a whole slew of brachos that talk about the personal needs, the personal bakasha that we all look forward to God answering our prayer for. And the last three brachos in Shmona Esrei are meant to be the thanksgiving. That is the Hodah. Now that we've presented our case, we thank God for the opportunity to speak, and we thank Him for the opportunity to give us maybe a chance at Him accepting what it is that we've asked for. So here, it's very strange. If this, in fact, is the opening phrase, the opening paragraph of Shevach, of the great praise that we have for God, you have to ask yourself, why do we talk about Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov? Why is that a praise to God when we talk about the fact that we had forefathers so many years ago who were very beloved to the Ribbono Shel Olam? How is that a praise to Him? That's a praise to us. That is not a praise to Him. So how do you explain that? So Rabbi Itzela Valozhiner, who was a very prominent great Jew who lived in the same time period as the Vilna Gaon, so he writes the following idea. So let me just read from his sefer and I'll translate. He says, Efshe Levar Al Pi Mashal. He says, I can explain it with the following parable. La'ani Echad, Am Ha'aretz, there was a very simple person in a town who really didn't have any money, and he couldn't sustain himself, he couldn't keep up. Shahayu Begadav Keruim Ubluim, V'gam Parcha Bo'atzaras, he has illness, and he has no clothing, and everything he has is falling apart, and he really doesn't have a roof over his head, and his whole life is in shambles. Be'iro Shel Ha'ani Haya Asher V'Nadvan Gadol. In that very city where he lived, there happened to be a very wealthy individual who was very magnanimous and liked to help out others. Amnam, Ein Zeh Min HaRoi SheYelech Elav HaAni VeYevaksho Liskar Ba'adom Melamed LeLamdo Torah. He said it wouldn't make sense for this Ani to just knock on the door one day and say, you know, I can't pay for my children to go to school, so I need help with the tuition. And look at my clothing. My clothing are all tattered, and I just don't even feel like a mensch. And I don't have any food to put on the table, and look at the roof, it's leaking, and everything's going wrong. It's a strange thing to come and just say, I'd like to present my case, and I expect you to fill in for all of that. Obviously, that's an unrealistic expectation. And he says, what would be the idea that you would give this poor man when he comes to present his case to this wealthy individual in his town? He says, Im birtzono shel ha'ani shiyu dvarav nishmayim, if this poor man wants that his word should be really listened to and accepted, yomar lo, he should say, shamati shezu darkecha mina urecha. You're not new at this. I know that you've been a generous person for so many generations. And I know that when my father had a problem in his business 25 years ago and he needed a last-minute loan and the bank defaulted on the loan and he just wasn't able to put it through, and you were the one who came through and you put him back on his feet. And I know that my father was not the only one. I know that every member of this community has relied on you for so many generations, and it was your father, and it was your grandfather, and this is the tradition in the family, this is the way you always do things. And he says, once you present the story like that, and you say about how grateful your family is for all of the help that they have received over the many, many years that you've had a relationship with them, then it's much easier to present the case and say, and because this is the style in which you live, I am sure that you will come through now once again and be willing to have a sensitive heart and listen to my case and help me as well. And therefore he writes, this is what we mean when we say Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. Our forefathers needed so much help from God himself. And we say to God, we know and we are well aware of the fact that you helped Avraham Avinu. We know that you helped Yitzchak. We know that you helped Yaakov. We know that this has always been the way of God. You are the most generous being that the world has ever known. The whole reason why God created the world, writes, is just lehetiv im habrios. It was just to do good for man. And therefore we present our case by saying, since this is the way you have always run the world, since this is the way we always have had a relationship with you, therefore we know that you are going to follow through once again and you are going to continue to nurture and nourish that relationship with us.
Is it less that we're really using him up versus us really putting ourselves in our place? This man in the story, maybe you would want to schmooze him up and say, your father did for my father and your grandfather did for my grandfather, and you're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But God is God.
God is God. So that's a very important point. Because the Pasuk says, actually, in this week's Parsha, it's a great question. The Pasuk writes in this week's Parsha, Asher lo yisa panem velo yikach shochad. You can pay off a judge. You know, I was just in court a couple of weeks ago with a couple in our neighborhood who's getting divorced. And, you know, somebody made a comment to me before the court case actually came before the judge. We were all standing in the hallway together. And somebody made a comment, you know, who knows? Maybe the judge had a fight with his wife this morning when he woke up. Or maybe he had a lovely date night with his wife last night and therefore he's so pro-women and therefore he's going to be pro the wife or maybe he's going to be anti the wife. You never know. And you never know what can happen. Human beings have the ability to be swayed in either direction because of personal circumstances. And therefore, when we present a case in a certain way, obviously we're not paying off the judge, but we have a way sometimes with words that we are able to present a certain cause to a person and know that they are more likely to listen to us because of the presentation. So what you're asking is a very important question. Do we really believe that God is able to be paid off with words? Asher lo yisa panim. Don't we know that God is not going to play favorites? Don't we know God is not going to be fooled? Elokim yira lalevav. That is an amazing statement that was made when Shmuel, the great prophet, was asked to go look at one of the children of Yishai. Does anybody know the story? So all the children of Yishai, there were a bunch of brothers. I think it was six or seven brothers. So we're told at one point in history, the Jewish people say they need a new king. And God instructs Shmuel, the prophet at the time, I'd like you to go to the family of Yishai. This is exactly where they live. You know who Yishai is. He's a very prominent individual, and you are to anoint his son as the king. So he shows up, and he sees the oldest child. I forgot what the oldest child of Yishai's name was. And he looks at him, and he says, wow, this is a really charismatic person, and look how he carries himself. And he would be the perfect candidate to serve as the king of the Jewish people. And as that conversation is going on, God turns to him and he says, no, you have the wrong one. That's not who I'm looking for. So he says, okay, maybe God is referring to the second son. And he goes through all of the children, and ultimately God says, no, you have it all wrong. Ha'adam yira le'inayim, v'Hashem yira le'levav. Man is only able to have a one-dimensional perspective. We cannot see what's behind the surface. We cannot see what a person in their heart is really thinking or feeling. All we're able to see is what's in front of us. And God says, yes, I understand. You see this child of Yishai has great charisma and he has great skills and he looks like he has real leadership qualities and he seems to be the right choice. But let me tell you, Ha'adam yira le'inayim v'Hashem yira le'levav. God understands what's in a person's heart. So your question is very powerful. What does it mean when we say we have an obligation to start off the Shemona Esrei with Shevach? Why do we start off with Pesukei Dezimra? It's the same reason. Because in some way the Gemara says we're supposed to butter up to God, but you're asking, God is not going to be bought off by our praise. So the Gemara, when it presents this, I think the question is probably better than my answer, but when the Gemara presents this, it says, that is the Midas Derech Eretz. This is the nice way for people to talk. Not so much that we're going to butter up to God, but it's a little bit disrespectful to walk in to a conversation without any prior discussion, without any pleasantries. You know, when you sit down to a meeting, and it's a pre-scheduled meeting, there are always a few minutes before the actual tachlis begins, before the actual discussion gets off the ground. You talk about how the kids, and how's this, and how's the neighborhood, and how'd you get here, how was the weather, how was the parking. You have all kinds of discussions that really are not so important, but that's the way that you get into a warm relationship, into a warm conversation. And the Gemara says that is basic derech eretz. That is the basic human dignity. That is the way human beings always talk to each other, and that is the way we are supposed to speak and have a conversation and relate to God as well. That we are at the mercy of God.
Right, and yeah.
what he's done.
Has done for us.
Right. When
and
you,
that's why we're asked, it's for us to have the appreciation.
For sure. I mean, later on in the Bracha of Shemona Esrei, in this same paragraph, we say, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, Vahanora. What does it mean, Vahanora? Vahanora means the mighty. What are we referring to when we say the mighty? What has God done that showed us his might? So you can answer that perhaps it's a reference to Kriyas Yamsuf. Maybe it's a reference to the creation of the world. Right? Maybe it means all of that. Let me share with you a passage of the Yavetz. The Yavetz was one of the... We're going to get to your question. The Yavetz was one of the great Gedolim. Okay, you'll remember it? If not, just write it down. So the Yavetz writes something fascinating. The Yavetz says, what does it mean when we say Vehanora? That God is the Almighty, God is the All-Powerful. Are we referring to the fact that He created the world? Are we referring to the fact that He did the miracle of Kriyas Yamsar or the Makwas or any other miracle from that time? And He says, Chai Nafshi. He says, I promise you. Ki behisponani beneflos ele. When I think about the great miracle of the survival of the Jewish people, think about the odds that the Jewish people are still around. He says, in my opinion, Gadlu etzli yoser mikol hanisim v'haneflos she'asa Hashem yizbarach labuseinu. That is a greater, more profound miracle than everything that God has done for us, to our forefathers in the desert and in Eretz Yisrael and in Egypt. V'chol ma she'erech hagalus yoser nis'ames hanes yoser. The longer our exile goes on, the more pronounced this miracle becomes. And if this is what he said in the days before the Holocaust, that you look at the survival of our people, and you understand that that is a greater miracle than all the great miracles that happened in Egypt, at the Yam Suf, at Har Sinai, then what would he say today? What would the Yavetz say today after seeing the incredible renaissance, post-Holocaust renaissance, Soviet Jewry all of a sudden came back alive? And look at the Baal Tshuva movement that exploded after Soviet Jewry was then allowed to have an interaction with religion once again. Writes the Yavetz, before all of that happened, the miracle of the survival of the Jewish people to me is more profound than all the miracles that God has done in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, in the desert, and at the Yam Suf. What would he say now? We are probably greater than the miracle of the creation of the world. And that's what we mean when we say, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, Vahanara. God is the Almighty. Look no further than the fact that I'm standing here and speaking with Him. That is the greatest might of God. That is the greatest miracle. No more needs to be said. And therefore, I think it goes very much to your point. Part of what we try to do when we talk about, when we recount all the great shvach, all the great praise that we owe God, is also to give us a perspective. Think about how much has happened to bring us here. We say all the hallelujahs. Think about the fact that there are oceans and rivers, and think about the fact that the world and just the way it runs, it's magnificent, it's amazing. That is the Nora, that is the great might, that is the great beauty of our relationship with God, and that is something that we highlight partially because that is from the normal way in which Derech Eretz dictates we should have a conversation, but number two as well, I think what you're saying is correct. It's also because we should give ourselves that perspective and remind ourselves that God is the Almighty, the All-Powerful, and He has the ability to provide for us.
Also, the Torah teaches us how to behave with people, like Nasa Adam.
Right.
So maybe this is the way to go about conducting.
Even though God doesn't need that, right.
Right, He doesn't need that.
Right.
But
we need to learn how to do it. That's correct. That could be. Yes, question.
So why wouldn't we call, instead of saying praises, we would say acknowledgments? We're acknowledging what Hashem did and does.
Okay.
Because I think that when you start with any company,
we acknowledge and then we thank Him for it.
Yeah, right. So that we start out saying, I acknowledge all these great things that you're doing for us. So it's not, so then I think that detached it from schmooze, you know, trying to like butter somebody up. Because it's not falsehoods, because then if you're acknowledging, you're acknowledging truth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As opposed to just being, you know.
That's acceptable. I hear that. Okay, so let's go back. Last week we spoke about the concept, which is a very problematic concept, called Zchus Avos. And we spoke about the fact that the reason why we mention Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov in the beginning of Shemona Esrei is because if I'm standing before God on my own merit, how much merit do I actually have? What do I think God really owes me? The answer to that is probably very little. So I stand on the shoulders of giants and I say, I had Avos. I had Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who were my forefathers, and therefore I stand on their shoulders and I ask in their merit that you listen to my prayer. I ask that you connect with me as well. So the Gemara has a discussion. What happens if somebody is a convert? So there are certain times, let's say in benching, when we say, Asher henchalta lavoseinu, we thank God for giving us the land of Israel, and He gave that to our forefathers. What if you have a convert? What is he supposed to say when he gets to that line? After all, it wasn't given to his ancestors. And the same problem presents itself in the Shemona Esrei. When you get up to the beginning of Shemona Esrei, when it says, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov, how do I deal with that? After all, those were not my ancestors. So this is a question. The bottom line is the Shulchan Aruch says that a convert says the same. Nothing changes at all. However, the Medrash writes the following. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, Yegia kapecha ki sochel. I think I said this at the very end of last week's shir. So the Navi there is referring to Zeha ger she'ein lo zchus avos. That is a reference to a convert who has no one to rely on beforehand. He cannot say, I'm a child of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and therefore give me something. Ukadei shelo yomar, a person may live in fear and say, ein li zchus avos. So says the Medrash, don't be afraid because Yegia kapecha ki sochel. Don't worry, you have the opportunity to live off of your own merit as well. And then the Medrash says an astounding comment. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, chaviva hi hamalacha mischus avos. It's an important statement. My hard work in life and my accomplishments are greater, are more worthwhile than all of the schus avos in the world. There is nothing in my experience of life that can be more meaningful than that which I've worked hard to accomplish on my own. There's an amazing story told about Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim Volozhiner said he was the greatest student of the Vilna Gaon. And he said on one occasion, his great teacher, the Vilna Gaon, told the students that if you pray with great intensity at night, then God will reciprocate. And in that evening, you will have an angel that will appear to you in a dream and will share with you all of the secrets of Torah that bothered you during the day. Now, the premise of that is there were many secrets of Torah that were bothered with during the day. You know, maybe the Vilna Gaon had many things he was troubled with and he went to sleep at night. Most of us can sleep just fine at night. But the Vilna Gaon said, if you pray with great kavana, with great intensity at night, perhaps God will send an angel at night to give you all the answers you were looking for. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, may I ask a little bit of an intrusive question? And he said, sure. He said, it sounds like you're speaking from experience. Maybe you can share with us some of the great secrets that you've been told in your dreams at night. Maybe you can tell us, what has the angel come and shared with you at night? What were some of the things that you were caught up with, that you were stuck on, that now you have a greater clarity of? And the Vilna Gaon said, Immediately he responded, "Every time an angel appeared to me at night, I said, 'No, thank you.' I would rather live with questions my entire life than to take the easy way out and have the angel teach it to me." And the Vilna Gaon said, "There is nothing more powerful than that which I work out on my own, than that which I work hard to figure out, than that which I work hard to accomplish. And of what meaning, of what value is life if I'm just going to have an angel that will show up and do all the work for me?" That is an amazing story about the Vilna Gaon, and the truth is that it shows up, this theme is something that comes up in many different contexts. For example, we know that at the end of every Shabbos, we say Havdalah. We recite Havdalah. Havdalah has a few components. We have a cup of wine, we say Borei Pri HaGafen, followed by Borei Mina B'Samim, followed by Borei Ma'ori HaEsh, that we light a fire, and we thank God for giving us that ability to light a fire and to once again have light in our lives. And the question is, what is the reason for the B'Samim? So the Gemara says the reason why is because the Pasuk says, "Vayom hashvi shavas vayinofesh," which means, on the seventh day on Shabbos, we all rest, vayinofesh, and we feel relaxed, and we feel laid back. And there's a play on the words there, the Gemara says, vayinofesh doesn't just mean that we all take a rest on Shabbos, that we all relax, it also means vay avda hanefesh. We bemoan the fact that we lose the Neshama Yisera after Shabbos is over. Which is a play on the words, not exactly what the Torah means, but it's an extra interpretation. Vay of the Hanefesh, that after Shabbos is over, we lose that. That's the Gemara.
Oh, the
Gemara Beitza. That we lose that extra Neshama that we had on Shabbos. So the assumption is that when Shabbos comes in, we are granted some kind of extra spirit, some kind of extra Neshama. Now, what exactly that means? Rashi says it means we have the ability to eat more than we would otherwise eat. I don't know. To me, I think when we talk about a neshama, it means there's something more spiritual than we have on Shabbos than we have during the week. But whatever it means, there's some kind of element of a extra neshama, something extra special that we have on Shabbos that we otherwise would not have during the week. So the question is, you'll notice, after Shabbos and after Yom Tov, we make Havdalah. However, there's one marked distinction between those two Havdalahs, and that is, after Shabbos is over, we don't smell the besamim. I'm sorry, after Shabbos is over, you smell the besamim. After Yom Tov is over, we leave that out. Why? If the assumption is we have an neshama yisera when Shabbos comes in, we probably have it when Yom Tov comes in as well. So much preparation that we've done for Yom Tov, so much that goes into it, of course there's a neshama yisera. I almost would say that we feel it more on Yom Tov than we feel it on Shabbos. Yom Tov is such a beautiful time with family and with the community. Neshama yisera must be there on Yom Tov. So Tosfos and Beitza ask this question. Why is it that we don't smell the Samim after Yom Tov is over? Wouldn't that make sense? It should be parallel to the Havdalah that we do after Shabbos. You'll see in a minute what this has to do with what we were talking about before. So Tosfos gives a few opinions. One option is, maybe there's no Neshama Yisera on Yom Tov, only on Shabbos. And therefore, no need for Besamim because we don't have it. Second option is, there is a Neshama Yisera on Yom Tov. And it's proven, perhaps, because on Yom Tov we say the paragraph of Nishmas. Nishmas Kol Chai is when we thank God for giving us this extra special Neshama. We say that on Shabbos, we say it on Yom Tov. So obviously there must be a Neshama Yisera. So why do we not say Borei Mina B'Samim after Shabbos is over? So the Ramban says in a very cryptic line, but the Shem Yishmuel explains it a little bit more ba'arichos, he explains it a little bit more expansively, and he writes, the answer is yes. Both on Shabbos and Yom Tov we have an Neshama Yisera. But let's think about it. Every Shabbos, Shabbos comes whether we like it or not. Whether we prepare for Shabbos or not, Shabbos will be here. And therefore, every seventh day of the week, regardless of how our week played out, God grants us a Neshama Yisera. And therefore, he says, easy come, easy go. You did nothing to make that Neshama Yisera be deserving of coming into your life. The minute Shabbos is over, that extra Neshama leaves. It's gone. Yom Tov, on the other hand, he writes, will not happen unless the Jewish people invest in Yom Tov happening. How do we know that? Because in the days of the Gemara, the only way that a festival, that a holiday can happen is if we declare that it's Rosh Chodesh. If we work hard to make that Yom Tov happen. And therefore he writes, something that we work hard to accomplish, and therefore we deserve the Neshama Yisera that we get, because we worked hard to create it, even after Yom Tov is over, it never leaves. Because we created it. Something that we create is worth more. That's a more meaningful experience than anything else in life that we can possibly imagine. And that is an important principle to think about.
I thought you were going to say, because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do more malacha than you're allowed to do Hashem.
So therefore? That is true. That is a distinction. I would have said in the opposite direction, right?
Right, right, no, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know, I was thinking maybe that is connected to that. It doesn't actually make sense.
So like, here's an amazing, let me just add to this thought for a minute. You ever think about, you know, Pesach night, sometimes we sit by the Seder, or these weeks we just read all the parshiyos about Shmos, Va'era, Bo, B'Shalach, Yisro, and we read about how amazing the story was of the Exodus from Egypt, and you think it all happened in the span of like, you know, a few minutes. You think, oh, there was dumb, and then, you know, when everyone got bored because of the blood, so then God decided, all right, let's change things up again. A few minutes later, all of a sudden, frogs started, you know, croaking and flying out of the walls. And then when that was getting a little bit passe, so then God decided, okay, we need some kinim and aro. That's not what happened. The Medrash writes that all of the makos were over the span of at least a year, if not more. And this was a very long process. So imagine you are a Jew living in Egypt, and you're watching all of these great miracles unfold, and you're asking yourself, you know, how great can God be? Look at this. Every day is something else. This is unbelievable. And I'm just watching as my enemies are suffering. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And it's unfolding in front of your own eyes. And yet, at no point did the Jewish people even think to thank God. When is the first time that anybody wakes up and says, you know, maybe we should thank God? How's the usher? When did that happen?
After
they crossed, right? So how much time was that after all this started? So you have at least a year of all the makos. So you'll say, maybe they weren't in a mindset to thank God because they still didn't know what the outcome was going to be. Then finally God lets them all go free. They go marching out of the land of Egypt. We're finally free. Nobody knew that there was going to be an obstacle later on, a week later, they were going to confront the Yom Tov and there was going to be this great man. Nobody knew that was going to happen. Everyone assumed, we're out. Now we're free. Nobody thinks to thank God. Everyone's silent. All of a sudden, a week after they left Egypt, they're confronted with this obstacle, with this problem. And God performs this unbelievable miracle. And all of a sudden, Moshe says, hey everyone, you know, just thinking, it would probably make sense we should all thank God. Az Yosher Moshe v'nei Yisrael. All of a sudden, everyone wakes up. Yeah, it's a great idea. And they all join Moshe in this song. What changed? What happened until now? How come nobody thought to thank God before this point? And suddenly Moshe Rabbeinu galvanizes the entire Jewish people. It's time to stand up and thank God. Time to praise Him. What changed? And Rav Soloveitchik writes a profound insight. There was one marked distinction between everything that happened until now and what happened at this great moment of Kriyas Yom Tov, of the splitting of the sea. And that distinction is that up until this point God said, Hashem yilachem lachem ve'atem tacharishun. You don't do a thing. You sit back and watch as I allow this miracle to unfold. Ani velo malach, ani velo hashaliach. We say it on the night of the Seder, we say it on Pesach. I don't need anyone being involved. God says, I will do this myself. It wasn't until the moment of Kriyas Yom Tov when God said, all of the Jewish people are standing there in front of the sea. Nobody knows what to do. Moshe's immediate response is the same that it has been all along. Turn to God and He'll save you. And this time God says, no. Ma titzak elai. Why are you turning to me? Now I hand it over to you. It's your turn to make the miracle happen. It's your turn to move history forward. And here God said, I'm going to partner with human beings to allow them to intervene and to create the next chapter of their own history. There is no greater feeling in the world than when God hands it over to us and says, now I want you to work hard to create your own destiny.
And where does he...
One second. It? And then the Jews respond by saying, Az Yosher Moshe v'nei Yisrael, because there is no experience in life as meaningful and as powerful as that. What did you ask?
Where is this in the...
In the Chumash?
Yeah.
When God listens to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe's crying, and he says, "We're all stuck. What do we do?" And God says, "Ma titzak elai? Why are you crying to me?" This is in Parshas Beshalach. Daber el bnei Yisrael v'yisrael. It's time for the Jews to start walking. And we created the next chapter of our own history. We made it happen. That's a reason to celebrate. That's the highest level of being grateful, because God shows we have the ability to make a difference in the world. And when God allows us to be a part of that, there is nothing more meaningful than something that we create on our own, instead of just relying on others, relying on God, relying on Schus Avos. This is an important concept.
The actual walking out of Egypt.
That was all, yeah, that was everything God, yeah.
And when they got to the sea, he sort of lightly took his hands off.
He lifted a little bit, yes.
And said,
"Yeah,
it's up to you."
Mm-hmm. Take for another example, we have a concept.
The splitting of the sea.
Yeah, we have a concept in halacha. Very often in the Gemara you'll find that the Gemara is very sensitive about people's feelings. So the Gemara says, there used to be very unusual practices when there was a Shiva house, for example. So the Gemara says, Shiva houses back then did not seem the way that we perceive Shiva houses today. The Gemara says that everybody would come with cups of wine. And the Gemara, in fact, writes, Lo ivri yayin ela lenachem avelim. One of the reasons why wine was created in the world is to help alleviate the pain and the stress that an avel feels upon the loss of a loved one. That's the way it was. And everybody would come over with all kinds of schnapps, all kinds of wine, and they would drink together to make the person feel a little better, that they should forget about their suffering. Obviously, we don't do that today, but that's what was done. And the Gemara says it depends what kind of echelon of society you were a part of. So if you were one of the more prominent members of the community, everybody would come with their fancy gold and silver cups, and they would bring it into your home, and they would make a whole display. And if you were just a poor little farmer who lived in the outskirts of the town, people would show up with their little schnapps, plastic cups, and they only brought the shlivovitz, they didn't bring anything fancy, and that's what you had to deal with. And the Gemara says it got to a point where people were too embarrassed to sit Shiva, because everybody's going to find out. Yeah, it's terrible. So it was too embarrassing, it was humiliating, and therefore they said, no, from now on we're going to have one standard for everybody. We're going to have uniformity, everyone's going to have the same thing, regardless of how much or how little you have. This is what everyone's going to do. And the same says the Gemara. It used to be that people who saw that their end was near would have tachrichim, custom-made tachrichim made, shrouds to be buried in. And they would have all kinds of beautiful things put on them. They wanted to look nice. And the Gemara says it became an embarrassment. Why? Because it got to a point where people were ashamed to be buried. Because everybody would come to the funeral and, they'd all be looking. Ooh, look what he made, look what he didn't make. Oh, he couldn't afford it, he could afford it. It got to a point where it was out of control. So the Gemara says from then on they made one uniform standard, and that is everybody needs to have the same very simple shrouds. No frills, nothing on it, just simple. That's the way everyone's going to be buried, regardless of where you come from, regardless of your socioeconomic status. Everyone is the same. And this is what the Gemara writes in many different places, that the halacha is very sensitive to people's feelings, and we always have to think carefully about how it is that we favor one member of the community over the other. There is one place where there's a difference. And that is once a year, there was an obligation of farmers to bring their first fruits up to the Beis HaMikdash. So they have to bring their fruits up to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says they show up in the Beis HaMikdash and they stand before the Kohen and there's a whole ceremony that's done and they present their fruits in a beautiful basket and the Kohen does whatever he does. And then the Gemara says the following. It's actually a Mishnah, Mishnayis Bikurim. The Mishnah writes in the third parak of Bikurim, that on that occasion, the farmer who had the wicker basket would present it to the Kohen. The Kohen would not only take his fruits that he presented, but he would take the basket and he would keep it. The farmer who had a gold or silver basket, the Kohen would take the fruits out of the basket, and then he would return the basket back to the farmer that he can use it again in the future. Two problems, asked the Malbim. The Malbim is one of the foremost commentaries on Chumash, so he has this question in Sefer Dvarim by the mitzvah of Bikurim, and he says, I don't understand. Two things. Number one, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. Mm-hmm. This doesn't make sense.
Give back the basket, keep the gold bowl.
The one who's able to afford... yeah,
exactly.
The opposite. The farmer who's able to afford to bring a gold and silver basket obviously has enough money that you can leave it there. Let the Kohen keep his basket, send the guy home, and next year he'll figure out something else. And the farmer who was only able to afford a wicker basket, now you take it away from him? This is all I have in my house. What am I going to do tomorrow? I have to put the bananas and the peaches and the apples in a basket. I have nothing to use in my house. But we take it away from him. That's number one. And number two, asks the Malbim, why are we not concerned with uniformity? By every other aspect of halacha, of religious life, we're always concerned with the sensitive feelings of the person who's poorer, the person who's richer, and we have one uniform standard. Here, all of a sudden, we show up to the Beis HaMikdash. Tons of farmers come from all over the country. One of them's going to look over his shoulder and see his friend has a gold one, a silver one. He says, "Ayve, this is terrible. I'm so ashamed. Everyone's going to know how much money I have, how much money I don't have." Says the Malbim, all of a sudden, we're not concerned. All of a sudden, we forget about his feelings. We're not sensitive to how he's going to perceive all of those who are around him, who obviously have a lot more than he does. And then Malbim writes so beautifully, I encourage you to look it up on your own, because it's so beautiful, just the terminology that he uses. And he says, perhaps the reason why is because Derech ha'ani she'oseh hatena be'atzmo. How did this poor farmer get the wicker basket? He didn't go to a store. He couldn't afford it. So every night he comes home from work and he's so exhausted and he says, you know, in 2 months from now, I'm going to have to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to have to bring my first fruits. I'm going to have to bring them in something. And he's trying to plan. What am I going to do? And he sits down, and with his last bit of energy that he has before he goes to sleep, he starts weaving a basket together. And then he says, okay, I can't do this anymore. He comes back the next night. He picks up from where he left off. And finally, over time, he creates a beautiful basket. Says the Malbim, you can have all the gold and silver in the world. It's worth nothing when you compare it to the hard work of a poor farmer who just wants to present himself to God and the best he could do. That is worth more than anything else. And says the Malbim, why should he feel uncomfortable? Uba'avur shatarachba, because so much effort was put into this, because you worked hard to create it, the Kohen wants to show you we value all of that. The gold and silver, I don't need it. The Kohen says, take it back home. It's worth nothing to me. You know what's worth something to me? When I see that you have dedicated yourself to the cause. When I see that this is something meaningful to you. When I see that you have really done something for God that took a lot of your energy, a lot of your effort. And the Kohen says, the way we are going to reward you is by showing you that basket we're going to keep. That's more precious, that's more meaningful than anything else. I've said in the past, I don't know if I ever said it here, there's a family that I know in the Five Towns who have a beautiful house. Everything in their house is just perfect, just so. You walk in, it's like a museum. And I couldn't help but notice, I've been to their house many times, in one of the rooms, I don't know if it's the living room or the dining room, I can't remember, but in one of the rooms where there are guests all the time, you will see the fakest flowers you have ever seen. You know, some fake flowers look pretty real. Some fake flowers look like the fakest flowers you have ever seen. And I couldn't help but notice, like, this is so strange. They have this fake bouquet of flowers. You can tell the second you look at it, it is so fake in the ugliest vase. But I never had the guts to ask what it was all about. It's none of my business. But on one occasion, this woman shared with me what it's all about. And she said, for many years when they were raising their children, they had a babysitter. And she said, I was a professional, my husband was a professional, and this babysitter was so much a part of our family, and she dedicated so much of her time. But then at some point, my children were all in school, and we didn't need her anymore. So as much as we loved her, why would we continue to have her in the house? What are we going to do with her? She was not a cleaning woman. All she did was watch our children, and she did an amazing job watching them. But now all the kids are in high school. There's no after school that we need her for, nothing. So they gave her notice and they said, you know, we will be the first ones to give you a recommendation. Anyone who wants to hire you, we will give you the highest praise. But after 6 months, you know, of her really not finding anything to do, they told her they're gonna have to drop her. And she was very grateful to them. And she came the last day of work and she presented them with these fake flowers. And she said, I spent whatever money I had to buy you a gift that I thought would be meaningful. This woman told me that was the most meaningful gift I ever got in my life. Because it's not about how much it costs. It's about how much a person is willing to invest in it. And she said to me, I know that this babysitter gave everything she had because she really cared. And this is the sign of that. And she said, I never want to forget it. I would never throw it out. And that's a powerful lesson. When we talk about Schus Avos, when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will remember the merit of Avram, of Yitzchak, and of Yaakov, that's an amazing thing to remind ourselves of. But what about the opinion in the Gemara that says, Tama Schus Avos, it's been thousands of years, and we no longer have the ability to rely on all the merit of our forefathers, of our ancestors. It's been used up so many times over. And what about a ger, what about a convert, who certainly doesn't have that right to claim Schus Avos? The answer is, don't be afraid. Because the Medrash says, Chaviva hi hamalacha mischus avos. There's something greater than schus avos, and that is, when we show God how invested we are in this relationship, when we show Him how much it means to us, when we show Him how much we're willing to dedicate ourselves to develop and nurture that relationship, there is nothing that is more powerful or more meaningful than that. And that is worth more than all the schus avos in the world. There's a fascinating Gemara. If you look a little bit further, you will notice that we say Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, VeHanora. And those are different ways that we refer to the praise of God. This is taken from Moshe Rabbeinu. That is the way he referred to God. So the Gemara tells a story in Brachos that there was someone who once came to daven for the Yamud. And he stands up in front of the Yamud and he says, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, VeHanora, the mighty, the awesome. And he starts going on and adding more things. And he says, I love God so much, let me just add in the one who provides me with my parnasa, and the one who takes care of my children, and the one who made sure to buy me my house. And he just starts adding on everything he can ever think of. And he thought, he was well-intentioned. He thought, this is the nicest thing to do. And they stopped him and they said, it's inappropriate. Because if you're going to start with that, there is no end. Once you're going to start adding, how do you stop there? You got to thank God for your blood sugar level being proper and for not giving you all kinds of illnesses. And you have to thank God for the eyesight that you have and for the ability to hear and for the ability to walk and the ability to breathe and the fact that every single component of your body, there's no end. You'll never get out of there. So we limit it to the praise of Moshe Rabbeinu. But here is a fascinating Gemara in Yuma Daf Samach Tes Amud Beis where the Gemara says, so yes, it's true. We refer to God in the opening statement of Shemona Esrei as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, VeHanora. Says the Gemara, there were Nevi'im who came along and said, we cannot say that. So for example, in the days of Yirmiyah, anybody familiar with what happened in the days of Yirmiyah? Yirmiyah was living through the days of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He lived through the Churba. And that's when the Jews were at a very low state of being. That's when everything fell apart. And Yirmiyah says, I'm watching God's own home. I'm watching God's Beis HaMikdash be destroyed. How can I get up tomorrow in the morning and say, Hanora, that God is so mighty? Really, if you're so powerful, you're so mighty, how did you allow our enemies to destroy your own home? So the Gemara said he brazenly took that word out. Took it out. Next morning he comes to Shul, takes the word out. Comes along Daniel, another one of the great prophets, and he says, you know, I look around and I see tremendous devastation everywhere I see, everywhere around me. I look around Yerushalayim and I see the Jews have been kicked out. And I see that there are Nachrim Mishtabdim B'manav. I see that God's own children are now under the leadership of foreign nations. We're not even serving God anymore because we're so preoccupied taking care of our masters who have complete sovereignty over us. Says Daniel, you tell me that God is such a Gibar, God is so powerful? How can He be powerful if He allows His nation to be under the sovereignty of others? That can't be. Takes out the word Hagibar. And the Gemara says that each one of the prophets took out one of these words. Hagadol, Hagibar, VeHanora. And that's a very problematic statement. How do you understand that? What right does a prophet have to just start editing the Shemona Esrei? I don't care how great of a prophet you are. What right do you have to start taking words out from what Moshe Rabbeinu himself said? Sounds to me like a pretty arrogant thing to do. So Rav Soloveitchik explained as follows. And this is a general principle that he said applies to all brachos that we say. A bracha needs to be based on the perception of the person who is experiencing that moment. So for example, the Gemara says we have different experiences in life. Sometimes we have a happy moment, sometimes we have a moment which is very painful, which is very sad. And the Gemara says, on both occasions, we need to recognize the presence of God. And the Gemara's heading to that statement is, Kishem Shemavarech Al HaTov Kach Mevarchem Al HaRa. The same. It's the same God that provides us with both of those experiences, and therefore, we need to recognize God's presence in the positive moments of life and in the negative. However, the Gemara says, when something positive happens, we say a bracha HaTov V'HaMeitiv, which means we are so grateful, we're overwhelmed with gratitude, and we're so happy about what's happening. When something negative happens, we make a bracha Dayan HaEmes. We recognize the fact that God is the reason why this happened to us, but as far as I'm concerned, this is a very painful time, and God seems to me to be very strict right now. He doesn't seem to me to be a Baal Chesed. He doesn't seem to be showering me with love and kindness. Sir Rav Soloveitchik asks, if you honestly believe that God is a Baal Chesed, that God is the ultimate giver, that God is the ultimate doer for all of us, the ultimate provider, and you believe that all experiences in life actually come and stem from God Himself, then why don't we make the same bracha on both experiences? When we suffer a loss in the family, we should say, HaTov HaMeitiv. As strange as it sounds. But I should say, God, I recognize you obviously did this for my good because you're looking out for me. Thank you very much. The same way I would say that when giving birth to a child or when something else wonderful happens to me in life, I should also say it when I lose a family member. Why? Because after all, I do believe that God is the ultimate giver, He's the ultimate doer, He means to do positive things for me. So how do you explain that? And Soloveitchik said the answer is, as much as I believe that everything is for the good, my perception of God right now at this moment is that He is a Dayan HaEmes. I don't see God right now in my perception as a HaTov HaMeitiv. Yes, in the subconscious, do I really believe that? Yes. But right now, the way I perceive the situation in front of me is, God is a Dayan HaEmes. And life is difficult, and life is complicated, and I don't understand why God had to make this decision. I accept it because I'm a believer in God, I'm a firm believer in God, but I believe that God is a Dayan HaEmes right now. Rav Soloveitchik said, what you see from that Gemara is that whenever one engages in making a bracha, it always has to be based on the perception of the human being who is making that bracha. My perception right now is that God is a Dayan HaEmes, then that's the bracha I need to make. My perception right now is that God is a HaTov HaMeitiv, that everything's great, everything's positive. That's the bracha I need to say. And said Rav Soloveitchik, that is the way to explain why the Nevi'im took the liberty to take words out of the Shemona Esrei. It's not because they didn't believe that Moshe Rabbeinu got it right. Of course Moshe Rabbeinu got it right. And in the abstract, they agree. God is HaKel HaGadol HaGibur VaNor. He's almighty, He's amazing, He's all powerful, He's all over the place. I get it. However, they said, right now, our perception, living through a time of devastation, living through a time, a generation of destruction, our perception is that God is not Gibor, that God is not Nora, and therefore they said we have to take it out. Because brachas always have to be based on the perception and understanding of the human being who is saying it. And it just makes the experience so much more profound. It means we have to understand what it is that we're saying, and it has to actually make sense to us. But and that's sort of Soloveitchik, what?
Is that allowed?
Oh, so you'll say, is that allowed? So tomorrow morning I'm going to wake up and say, you know, I don't have a parnasa, I was laid off from my job. I don't see God as being the one who provides me with a parnasa. Or you can give a million and one examples. Shomei atfila. I've been asking for something for the longest time. It doesn't seem that God takes any interest in what I'm saying. Okay. So I should take it out. Rofe cholim. I'm asking that God should cure the sick. I've been davening for this and this person, and it seems that it's not working. So again, you might have to be Yirmiyahu HaNavi or Daniel or whoever it is to come up with that kind of idea. But at the same time, it is a very important concept conceptually to think about. Or for example, you'll notice in the next bracha that we're going to study, you'll notice that we say, at some times in the year, we say Mashiv HaRuach. At other times of the year, we leave it out. Why? God is always the Mashiv HaRuach. So number one, living in Chutz Laaretz, it means that God provides us with the rain. So why at some parts of the year do we say God provides us with the rain, and other parts of the year we leave it out? God always is the one who provides us with the rain. So the truth is, this was really patterned off of the seasons in Israel, where they have a rainy season, and then they have a dry season. During the summer, it does not rain. During the winter months, it does rain. And you can find this Mashiv HaRuach, the top of page 100, where it says, from Sukkot until Pesach, we say this phrase of Mashiv HaRuach HaMored HaGeshem. But during the rest of the year, during the summer months, we don't say it. Why? God is always the Mashiv HaRuach, and Rav Soloveitchik said it's the same thing. Because our perception of God during those summer months changes. And during the summer months, we don't perceive God as the Mashiv HaRuach because rain is the farthest thing from our minds. Again, this is talking about the Jews living in Israel who don't have rain in the summer. So, rain is not the way that they see God's hand in the world at that time of year. And therefore, because our tefillah, because our prayer always has to be patterned off of the reality in which we relate to God, therefore we assume that we need to make sure that we formalize it in that, we formulate it in that way. So during some parts of the year we say, Mashiv HaRuach HaMored HaGeshem, because our perception of God is that He provides us with the rain. That is the way we interact with Him. And at other times we do not, because our whole perception of Him changes. Yes, question.
Yeah,